And how do you feel about this kind of like crossing the streams here?
I am beyond excited.
Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Ducker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Baylor Bell, Lost Halls Podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
Adam, it's just you and I right now.
So it's got some OG-ness about it.
In the middle of the show, I'm actually going to do a special segment with Pleasant Kenobi.
Fantastic, gentlemen.
After that, we'll come back with us, and we'll see who can round up for that last segment. Might just be you and I again.
Is what it is, man.
But what I talk about with Mr. Kenobi is the comparisons between a healthy competition environment in games. And specifically, we talk a little bit about Magic the Gathering and the comparisons to how Wizards of the Coast interacts, you know, with their match play, organized play structure. And I thought it'd be cool to have that kind of comparison between Warhammer 40,000, Age of Sigmar, and the like. And, you know, I thought also be a good topic for you and I to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very, very interesting thing in our game, especially because I don't want to say there are no comparisons out there for the competitive tabletop miniatures game, but they're very few and far between. As for where do we go to find frames of reference for what we should be aiming for as a community, if this is something we want, as in to have a competitive system.
And I've thought about this a little bit in the fact that I was thinking like, well, you know, Magic isn't the same because you don't have to paint models and whatever. But mm-hmm. I thought, well, yeah, there is a monetary component to Magic as well. And then the more I thought about it, not to like jump to the end of the conversation, but the more I thought about it is the closer you try to play to the bleeding edge, the more likely you are to get cut.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Magic is... A lot of it, well, the turnover in Magic is, even people who would say the turnover in 40K is becoming erroneous or too quick, as in the rules turnover.
You mean when things rotate out, so when things are no longer either in fashion or just change because of some rotation in points or something, you know, something changes.
Yeah, which could have been the comparison with Magic is there. Magic, you know, was it every other month or is it every 3 months a new set comes out?
So I don't know the exact release schedule, but I know that there are sets that rotate out every couple of years or so, and then new sets rotate in at least every quarter or every 6 months or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, I believe that, like, there could be something that we're leading to, that we're headed towards in 40K. You know, we've got, like, the different, you know, Narkman books and different chapter-approved books and here and there and whatnot, having different, you know, slight variations on the same play structure. And that could very well be somewhere we're headed. So there's definitely some comparisons to look at there. But you're right. You don't need to paint miniatures. You don't need to build miniatures. And whilst Magic is quite expensive, I would argue that, you know, how much does a deck of 60 cards for the standard Magic, you know, competitive event cost? You compare that to a standard 2,000 point list, and I think the monetary difference would be enormous.
Right. And so a lot of that value on the Magic side is the secondary market of cards. And, you know, that's probably something that we talk about with Pleasant Kenobi. So let's just assume that Magic is a competitive environment that's been going on for years. It's kind of established mm-hmm. to how yeah. it works. And they do things like ban cards or sets rotate out or whatever that help craft this environment for organized play. Now on the Warhammer 40,000 side or Games Workshop side in general, you know, we've seen that kind of gel up over the last, what has it been, 2 years?
Since GW's been back, like, so they've been actively trying to balance the game and engage in the competitive side of things. Since the start of 8th edition, you know, they did that wipe at the end of 7th. And since then, they've been actively trying to achieve balance. But yeah, their full support all in on the competitive side of things is, yeah, the last 2 years or so.
And like chapter approved and things like that. And so I guess the question is it enough? Is it too much? You know, and then who's really impacted by these changes for us to influence an opinion of is it too much or enough? You know, it's, I know we're soul searching here for a minute.
Yeah, we're kind of trying to look deep to see how we feel about this. As two people who both engage in the competitive scene pretty heavily,
and study it and analyze it.
Yeah, in multiple different facets as well. We're not just players, you and I. Shoutcasting, you know, podcasting, all these things. What G-Dub is trying to do, and I've said this multiple times on this show in particular, the task ahead of G-Dub is monumental. And it's only getting harder and bigger. They have more factions than like any other balanced game can shake a stick at. Like you think about a lot of esports, a lot of video games. Like StarCraft is a great example. Not only because, you know, they ripped off 40K, but also because they've got three factions. It's very easy to balance three factions. You know, it's very easy to get a bit of a rock, paper, scissors happening between them, but then some interplay, some deeper values below that on different builds and archetypes and rotations and build orders and all that stuff that happen in that game. What are we up to now? Leagues of Votan coming out? Are we up to like 18 core factions?
And then I think it's like 24.
Yeah, and then sub-factions therein. This is a monumentally hard thing to balance. Like,
think of board games too that rarely have more than five or six factions.
Yeah, I mean, I was for a while there, especially in 8th edition, when I could see that G-Dub, while not floundering, were trying to find their feet as how do we balance this game? What a, you know. I was of the opinion back then they needed to sandbox it. They needed to be like, here's the open play and here's the competitive play. And the competitive play for this 6 months or a year, you can't use these units in your army, or you have to use this exact, we'll bring out an exact.
Oh, wow, you went right for the band stick. You just like.
Yeah. Actually, narrow sandbox the amount of units and choices. Don't sandbox factions. Every faction should be playable at all times. But, you know, remove some of the erroneously hard things to balance. You know how hard Space Marines would be to balance? Just Space Marines? There's like 90 data sheets. You know? You know how hard? There's 90 like units in that army. How do you need a team to get perfect balance? You would need a team to just balance Space Marines. You'd need a team to just do the Xenos. You'd need a team to just do, you know, chaos. It's monumentally hard. And they're doing, we have seen a consistent pair up of how much they're doing as well. So, but it's also in 9th edition, and this is, there's a lot of external factors that have made this the case. We've seen it be somewhat inconsistent. Like in 8th edition, it was very predictable. Your army would have an index, and then they'll get a codex, and then within a month they'd get an FAQ to that codex, and then you'd get another codex, and within a month another FAQ to that codex. That hasn't been as consistent in 9th edition for whatever reasons. I'm sure there's plenty of very good ones. It's been a phenomenally crazy 3 years, but yeah, they've paired up. We're getting bi-yearly points updates now, rather than just yearly points updates, in addition to bi-yearly mission updates and competitive mission updates. So I think it's headed the right direction, because it, like with Magic, you can't just, when they have only 10 sets or however many sets of cards existing in the competitive format at one time, what they call air quotes standard play. Mm-hmm. If we could do something similar,
and there are other formats, but we're for sure. Yeah. You and I are talking right now about, you know, whatever the non-eternal format is.
Yeah. They've got modern as well. They've got historic. They've got commander. They've got, all sorts. But if we were just to talk about their standard play, competitive play versus our competitive play, they have 10 sets, 10 sets of cards, which maybe, let's just say, theoretically have 100 cards in each.
Oh, it's more than that. It's actually, your example might get out of hand here in a minute.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, but even then they have like, let's say they just have 1,000 things to balance. And some of those are lands and stuff that just kind of take care of themselves. We have just in Space Marines, we have 100, give or take. And then within Space Marines, we have how many different chapters within Space Marines?
All needing their
own variants, their own flavor. They're all unique units, their own warlord traits, relics, psychic powers, stratagems. Like, you want to talk about how much more complex this gets for 40K balance. It's a phenomenal task. And whilst I don't think up to right now, I don't think they've done a great job with it, mostly because they went for like 9 months without helping at all in the middle of COVID.
Well, no, let's talk about the now. Is it? I think that the balance data slates, the fact that chapter approved is a thing, and like I think this is all cumulative of us being in a good spot. Like, I am of the opinion we're in a good spot. Is it I guess is it too much? But I also want to have, and I'm not saying things can't be good. You know, I always think things, it's fine for things to be powerful and good. But I like everyone to feel like they have their codex has a shot at taking down a, you know, a major or whatever. And that seems to be, you know, kind of where the game is going, is to where they're not afraid to make some of these bold updates. But is it frequently enough? Are they hands on or hands off enough at the moment?
I think they're like, we've got to give them the floor, so to speak. You know, we've got to give them the rope to lift themselves up or hang themselves with it, you know, like to prove to us that they can do it. And they have paired up recently this year from, you know, to the quarterly balanced data slates and the biannually points updates. So, I mean, yes, but then now we have to wait for, yes, they are doing enough. As long as the execution's there, as long as they consistently make the right choices, this is enough, I think, to to make the game into a golden era of amazing balance.
We should want it.
That should be the aim. The aim should be perfection. You remember in 8th edition, yeah? We didn't have it for long, but we had like a 5 to 6 month period of possibly a perfect game of phenomenal game balance.
Index Warhammer.
No, it was actually after the Orcs and GSC books and prior to the second Space Marine book. We had a metagame where competitively just about everybody had a shot. There was one or two that maybe had less than others, but there was a huge, really healthy middle tier, and then just one or two at the top that were very beatable. And that was that is the best any tabletop game has ever felt to me. Was that 6 months. And then we know what happened with Space Marine 2.0 and all that stuff. But yeah, that should be the goal, to get back to where that was sustainably for multiple years. Like, could you imagine an edition of the game where everyone just felt like they could win? Everyone just felt like their faction was enjoyable to play and had multiple builds, exciting things to do. Like, you know, you could get an army that wasn't just like what Harlequins had when their book came out, which was 9 Void Weavers and some Misk bits. You know, you had an army where you wanted to get 6, 7, 10,000 points of every faction that you liked because everything was playable. That should be the dream.
Eldari are pretty much that way.
Asurani are that way right now. Yeah. You could just get 20,000 points and everything.
But yeah, but that's the end goal, right? That every army is that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. Every army is that way. Every army has that depth, that excitement, that intrigue, that interest, and that multiple, you know, styles of builds and enjoyment. And I think we can do it. GW have taken us to the promised land multiple times in editions. I think the last time we had that, and this is kind of rough to say, prior to my experience with that in 8th edition, the only other time I'd felt the same was the first kind of year of 5th edition, which you might be able to speak to more than me. I was a bit in and out of the game then. I was in early teens.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was good.
It was really good, right? Yeah. Up until the Demons and Grey Knight books came out, and then it went a bit silly.
Yeah, Grey Knights, I've got some feelings around Grey Knights, but I also played Grey Knights, so I was part of the problem.
You were part of the problem. you love it.
But back then, you know, there wasn't this proactivity with, like, nudging the game. And it really, we're to people playing out there how they want, continue that. I'm talking about specifically for a competition environment, to where you don't, because going out there and like going from game store to game store, you know, I could walk into a game store anywhere in the world and just say, let's play a 2K match play game. And we know we don't have to spend a bunch of time talking about the setup or whatever. Mm-hmm. We can just play and have a great experience. We've got that now. Your friendly games, I don't say friendly, God, there's no good way of just, I have this vernacular, and I'm not trying to be like that all games can't be friendly or whatever, but in games where you're playing, you know, outside of the competition setting, you can do all this, have any discussion you want about, hey man, that unit just keeps wiping me off the table. I don't enjoy playing against it. Could you leave it at home today? Can we play a game where that didn't happen? You can have that kind of discussion with folks, and people should be empowered to do it. Don't ever think that you can't. But in a regulation setting, you know, you can't do that. The game's got to help us out. And I think the game is helping us out. And I think this proactivity that we've seen now is probably on the right track. And I could stomach a little more of it.
Yeah, I could stomach as much as they could give me. is the way I think. When for you and me, we lap this stuff up. We are
I don't want it to be changed all the time. Like I don't want to be like where okay, what now? Like how, what, you know, 10 minutes ago it was something else. You know, I want predictability in the change, and I think that's kind of where we're going.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, you want plotability, predictability. Like I would love to even, I mean, they tell us pretty much which month these things are going to come out in, and I always assume it's going to be the last week of that month. But like having a date for this stuff, like just having like this is the rules dates, like it will be out by this date, would give a lot of predictability to tournament organizers and events, where they could be like, okay, well, if we can either go the week before this date or the week after this date, people would leave that date open events wise because they'd be like, well, that's rules day, baby. That's the day everybody jumps online and talks about the biggest, bestest changes and gets excited about the future and stuff. And then, you know, it would give a lot of predictability for people out there wanting, you know, to have some new stuff to be excited about for their games. A Necron player who might be like, well, my army isn't great at the moment, but after that date, I better start getting some stuff ready because it's going to be back on, baby. We're going to be reanimating and they reanimate their passion for their new faction. Life.
There you go. I was searching for the pun as well.
Me too. But yeah, so I do think there is a lot of that to it as well. Plotability, predictability is kind of where I want it to go from now. I love what they're doing. The balanced data slate they just pulled out, the one with Armor of Contempt on it and the changes to Miracle Dice and the other bits and pieces, show just how broad and big they're willing to go to change the game to make it more healthy. Because we've seen, like, I mean, you didn't see Sisters, man, did you? We on the various other programs and shoutcasts that we do, like Sisters, Grey Knights were they were on the decline, and both have very exciting, very good 9th edition codexes, modern 9th edition codexes, and they were both on the decline. One little change from GW, resurgent, exciting, back brand new builds,
winning tournaments.
Yeah. Brand new builds and archetypes are available to them. So yeah, I like how big and broad they're willing to go. Like they're willing to just say, hey, you know what? You're wearing power armor, you get this buff now. That's exciting that they're willing to go that big.
Nice. Well, let's take a quick break. Then we will give the floor to our special guest, Vince, who will have a chat, you know, comparisons between the games, get some insight from that side of the shop. He also plays Warhammer, been pretty active going to tournaments and that kind of stuff. So I got some really interesting things to say. And then we'll come back. Oh, also check out our sponsor. We got some amazing deals on some of those things we talked about. Go check out Discount Games. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hello and welcome everyone to a community spotlight segment here on Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul. I'm joined by Vince, also known as Pleasant Kenobi on the internet. Man, how are you?
I am very good, thank you. Just getting over COVID, but besides that, I'm very good.
Oh, hopefully it was a mild case and you are on the mend.
I am indeed, although you can definitely hear in my voice that I've got like some lingering cold-like symptoms, but I'm good.
Nice. Well, thanks for taking the time. And you've been on the show before. Welcome back.
No, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it last time.
So on this episode, in this segment, I would like to talk about, you're primarily known for card games. Got a channel.
Yeah.
You're on other channels. People should check you out. Like put a lot of kind of compelling, thought-provoking content out there. And then just some fun stuff, which is neat. But I wanted to talk about, Magic is the card game that I'm referring to specifically. And they have various formats over there. And those formats, you know, go through periods of revision each year. You know, different, sometimes it's in the form of banning, sometimes it's in the form of restrictions, you know, and we can talk about that. I don't want to frame it too narrowly. But then on our side, you know, you also play Warhammer. You know, you've been going to tournaments recently, been tearing it up out there, having a great time. You got a lot of hobby videos out, so people should check it out if they are curious, looking for something else to listen to. And so you play both things, and I wanted to talk about the comparisons, you know, differences and similarities between trying to keep these kind of healthy, competitive, or fun environments through things like rules adjustments one way or another.
Yeah, definitely. I guess we could preload this with explaining exactly, like, because obviously the majority of people listening to this podcast are going to be Warhammer and probably 40K fans, right? But so Magic's competitive is set up into different formats that basically allow you to play cards from a certain card pool, basically from a starting date. So Modern allows you everything from around 2000 and off the top of my head, 3, I think it is. Legacy is everything, and Standard is normally the last couple of years. Standard is the interesting one as the mainstay of Magic because it rotates. So you have a new set will come out and the last set from 2 years ago will like fall off and not be available anymore. Personally, I think this is not the best competitive format because it makes the barrier to entry even higher. We all know that like Magic decks and Warhammer armies are expensive, right? Imagine having painted up or get units together and then some of them become not legal in 2 years' time. So I'm not.
It's not that they're not fashionable to take anymore, is that you just cannot take.
Exactly. They are literally not legal anymore. There is an argument that that happens in 40K, like an artificial rotation, and we see it with each codex where new things are better than they used to be and old things aren't as good. Like look at 8th going into 9th, right? Like Leviathan Dreads were all over eBay at the beginning of 9th because no one wanted them anymore because they just weren't good enough. And Centurions too, right? Centurions were the height of favor at some point in 8th, and then 9th they literally took Bolt of Discipline off them and stuff, right? You can see that they adjust the rules to create a form of rotation, but Magic's is, for Standard at least, is literal. They're like, this set, all of Zendikar Rising or whatever block you want to think about, is now no longer legal once the latest set comes out, which does make a dynamic environment and makes people have to innovate. But I'm not a fan of that style of competitive play because I think it creates a huge barrier to entry and makes people have to just like, you know, you can't just come back with your army from like 2 years ago and give it a go because your deck will no longer be legal.
Yeah, as those things have rotated out, as that's the nomenclature.
Yeah, exactly.
I think.
It's literally called rotation. Yeah, yeah. Oh. And I mean, we've got seasons coming to Warhammer, haven't we? They just landed. We've started on the seasonal thing, but I don't think they're going to rotate anything. They're rotating things out of the shop. People feared at first when those articles went up that meant they're going to rotate out of play, right? I remember my Discord was very, oh no, are they rotating certain characters out of into legends, if you will? But that didn't happen, thank goodness, because I think that'd be a very bad idea.
Well, we kind of have a template, you know, with Sigmar. You know, they're in the season and they're going through. They're in the realm of Gur, like they're in a, playing in a very particular realm, and so some of the missions and things that are the focus are focused around that realm. And I think that's cool. I mean, there's nothing like that in Warhammer 40,000 at the moment, other than the fact that when we got a change in this year's missions, it went from, you know, retrieving Nachman data.
Yeah, you know, they changed the names to fit the war zone.
Octarius data to Nachman data. You know,
but that said, the next GT packet supposedly has different mission objectives for Sisters and Drakari, right? And a few others. They mentioned it in like a Warhammer comms article. So what that looks like, it might be that we get like themed objectives.
I don't want to get too speculative.
Exactly.
I'm here for it.
That's not the topic of this segment. But yeah, that could be a thing they do. They theme it around stuff.
But there are things, you know, like with the balanced data slates, we're seeing them quarterly. There's chapter approved and where points get changed around. And then if we can draw a comparison to Magic, you know, we mentioned the rotation, and we won't necessarily talk about Standard because I know that's not where you spend the most of your time. I don't think anyway.
No, I play the Eternal formats with like where older cards are legal, but bannings happen regularly.
Yeah, even in the Eternal formats. Yeah, some of these things it changes there where cards that combos, you know, that become about because of new inventions or whatever, or just people have finally cracked the code on it. You know, there are cards.
There are cards that were absolutely useless and saw no play, and then a new one will come out that will, like you said, combo or synergize heavily with that card, and suddenly a card that was worth, and this is the thing again, Warhammer as much because it's not, there's no scarcity in the sense, but a card that was 50 cents on the secondary market will suddenly be a $30 card. I was playing this morning, and Colossus Hammer is a good example of this. It's like an uncommon that came out, and it shotgunned, it catapulted a load of old rares that interact with equipment, but there was no good equipment to interact with. It catapulted them to the forefront of Modern, so they became a tier one deck in Modern. That's now one of the best decks in the format, and it's the deck to beat if you're going to a tournament. Yeah, it happens all the time. And you see a bit of that with Warhammer, with like new units and models being released, but nothing tends to shift metas that severely. Like, I mean, Thousand Suns got a chaplain style thing that can buff vehicles this edition, right? But we didn't see it suddenly change Thousand Suns lists. So that doesn't really happen in 40K as much.
Yeah, we're just two folks talking, by the way, just kind of theorizing, living from, staring at each other from different worlds, talking about this stuff.
But that said, though, sometimes you get new stuff get printed or created in 40K that does rock the metagame. Like look at the Celestian Sacrosants, right? They were a new model in the new codex, And they were cracked when they first come out, right? Like, people were taking 20, 25, 30 of them and stuff. And slowly but surely, they've been point hiked and they've been errated. The bodyguard have all got changed, right? Yeah. So we do see kind of like how new cards can spike and be powerful. We do see new units come out and get pushed. I don't believe GW actually push every new unit to be great. Like, same book, the Castigator tank is terrible, right? So I don't think every new kit is
broken.
It
just won a grand tournament. With a Castigator in there.
I saw Sisters 1. I've been too busy to look at the list. I didn't know Castigator was in that list.
That's anecdotal evidence at best. I'm just saying that, you know, there is.
I was literally arguing with a friend of mine on my Discord 2 days ago that the Castigator is not worth it. You take a third vet squad. It's very funny if they've just won a grand tournament with a Castigator. I'll have to check that out. But my point is, not every new thing is broken. Like, okay, yeah. Better example, the Banner Bearer. That was in the new book for Sisters. I can't remember her name. I've never seen her on a tabletop. No one takes her. It's just because she's more of a thematic or narrative thing. So I don't believe GW push everything with power creep, but there are new sheets and new updates and new units that do come out and they do shift the metagame.
Yeah, so there's a comparison with Magic. And I guess as Magic, as I consider somewhat of the innovator in this space, although I think their formats are kind of driven by player demand.
Yeah.
But, as someone who's lived in that world for a long time, do you think that Wizards has the obligation to do that, or is it like necessitated by the players or what have you? Like, what's leading the changes over there?
So the creation of formats, to answer this, so the creation of formats is player driven a lot of the time. Like, the most popular thing in Magic at the moment is not even a tournament format. It's called Commander. It's a 4-player free for all. We get to play a load of city cards you wouldn't normally play with. And that was community created originally, and then Wizards adopted it over time. And you see that as well, where people tried to make a format called Frontier, but then Wizards adopted it and called it Pioneer. And that's now a thing that they're going to do at the Pro Tour. So formats are generated by demand to get to play with old cards that you love that have kind of been power crept out of the game in some ways or aren't legal in standards. That's that one. The adaptations that they make to those formats over time, so the banning of cards, you mentioned restricting earlier, that's not very common. That's only in Vintage, like the oldest format. But banning a card, so the card is no longer legally playable, which you don't really see in 40k at all, that is, the purpose of that is to make the formats healthy. So if a deck if you look at the tournament stats across all the online and paper tournaments, although paper tournaments haven't been around, they're only just coming back after COVID now. But if you look at all the stats, you see a deck has a 30% win rate or similar, or higher, or it's a 30% metagame share. Let's say it's not even winning its matches, but it's just, it's cheap, it's good, so everyone's playing it. Wizards will ban things to stop that being a problem. They are very slow to do that. They're almost careful about it. So you'll get people like myself making a lot of videos talking about how they need to fix formats. Like, I don't think Legacy, which is my favorite format in the whole game, is healthy right now, but they're sometimes very slow to act. Sometimes they take them a year to ban a card that everyone is saying is a problem, which perhaps is the best way to be. If they're banning things left, right, and center all the time, everyone would be quite upset because...
Well, you don't get a sense of like, you know what's happening. You're kind of very too cautious to do anything, almost paralyzed, I think, if there's too much frequent change.
There are situations where, like, they'll print a card. There's a card called Hogak, which is a good example. It's Oko. Oko is probably the best one. A Planeswalker in a main set. It's in Standard. And it was so good, it broke Standard, Modern, Legacy. It broke everything. It broke every format.
Wasn't that, I mean, if I can get with Eldraine for a minute, that's the set it came from, right?
Throne of Eldraine.
And like, as soon as they fixed one problem, there seemed like there was something else.
So they went through a period of like, kind of like we're just saying about how certain new units and books are really powerful. We were getting every set would introduce like half a dozen to a dozen cards that would like warp older formats or break them entirely. And by break, I mean become the most prominently played thing and there's no reason to play anything else. That was a common thread for a while. We went from like Wizards almost never banning anything to bans every month in different formats. Just like bans are the norm now. 2 or 3 years ago, if we had this conversation, I'll tell you that bans aren't as common as people think. Now bans happen quite regularly. They've calmed down again. The new sets aren't as powerful again. But Throne of Eldraine is one of the biggest culprits for that, yeah. Oko is one of the most broken cards they've ever printed. And he was like the face card of the set. He was like the big bad guy for the set. But they banned him pretty quickly in some formats because he was so good. So obviously good. Took a bit longer for other ones. So sometimes they do react if it's absurd. Like a 60% win rate, 50% metagame share. They're like, okay, this needs to be fixed. Perhaps quicker than GW do. Because there's an argument that Games Workshop didn't react well enough to AdMech quick enough or Drakari quick enough. But again, there's that caution, right? You don't want to, like you said, you want to let the player base in the metagame breathe. But then there's a fine line to tread, right? How imposing do you want the company to be in stepping in and fixing these things? But also, you don't want them pretending they're letting us adjust the metagame or letting the metagame adjust. And in reality, it's just not going to adjust because what they've printed or made is
something in a release cycle. Like, if it is the game going to be good if 4 months of this, what is
yeah, and that
considered
danger,
punishment,
right?
You know,
people stop going to events, people stop watching stuff on Twitch. We see that in Magic a lot. Like, we have Standard is a format that I can't stand because of the rotation, but it's often very boring because they're waiting for the next set to hit and a set to rotate out to fix it. And it'll just be boring when there's two good decks, everything else is terrible. And it'll just be a boring format to watch. And we see that a lot. There's a problem with the streaming presence of Magic and people watching streams because people get bored of seeing the same decks just smash into each other. Mm-hmm. There's an argument for that with Warhammer as well, because the top tables are often dominated by the same 2 to 3 factions at any one time, right?
So in Warhammer, there's the phenomenon of some of the best players in the world playing what is the new thing. And so, of course, they're going to be doing very well because they're also great players. Do you see that a lot in Magic? Or what is the desire or ratio of being in the meta versus trying to beat the meta? And what do the top players seem to gravitate to?
I think the same thing happens in Magic as you see in Warhammer, where the best players in the world will see the things that are evidently the best thing to be doing in the current like metagame and with the current tools available. In Magic, it's a bit easier to switch between decks and change your decks because cards are a lot easier to shift in and out, where with Warhammer, sometimes you've got to paint 120 Skitarii veterans or whatever. Yeah, the hobby lag, exactly. But, and that's one of the big problems, I think, with competitive Warhammer as a competitive game and as a tabletop esport or whatever you want to call it, is that hobby lag and that barrier stops a lot of players from even, like, you might have a guy who's very good at the game, but he just doesn't have the time to paint, you know, 13 Orc Buggies or whatever the latest thing is. So you see that in both games, but I think in Magic it's more common that people can just rent or borrow the cards from friends and do it, where with Warhammer you've got a select few who already have the collection or have the tools available to them to
select into it. Oh, I already have 300 conscripts, so, you know.
Yeah, or they own a game store and they have a streaming channel, so they've got an invested interest to be able to paint up these things anyway. Like, you see that in the UK with, like, this isn't slight to them, I like the guys, but, like, Glasshammer, I was chatting to Manny, and Manny just has the opportunity to paint all these things because it's part of his business, right? Like, he's where your average person who's, like, this is their hobby and they don't compete and they don't have a store, they may not have the chance to paint up all these Buggies and Skitarii because it's just not practical. But you get the same thing. The best players will gravitate towards the best things. You know, in any game that is one person wins over the other, there's going to be a best deck or a best army or a best list or best tech, right? Mm-hmm. So people will, and the best players in the world will find that. So you see that in Magic a lot.
Do you think Magic has it figured out with the frequency and, I guess, degree of touch that they put into curtailing the formats? Crafting the formats.
Good question. Sometimes they're doing a good job, sometimes they're not. It really does vary. So I guess the answer is no, because sometimes you're happy and sometimes you're not.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're gamers, man. Come on, that's...
But what I mean is, like, I think it's good that Games Workshop have data slates and point changes. And I think it's good that Magic the Gathering has bans and similar. I think it stops the game from degenerating into a not fun thing to play. Whether they react fast enough is the big debate. I often think they don't. But at the same time, it's such a thin line, such a delicate balance. It's really hard to say by what degree they get it wrong. So there might only be 5 or 10% over, if that makes sense. And that's a very wishy-washy answer. I'm sorry, Paul.
No, I want to commit. Are they the best? You know, no, that's, but, it's really, because it is a bit of a finger in the air type thing. How much is enough and how much is too much? And then how much does it factor into, you know, if you're one of the people affected by the change, then you might dig it less.
Yeah, absolutely. When you get your force nerfed, it's not great, right? It's kind of frustrating.
And then in, you know, with some of these formats, you know, the Eternal formats that you mentioned, that a lot of them do open up to the entire card range, so your collection never goes out. But there's also multiple formats within the Eternal format. So there's Legacy/Vintage. You know, then you mentioned the Pioneer and the Modern. Yeah. I mean, is Modern even a thing anymore?
Yeah, Modern's still a thing. Modern's still one of the more popular Eternal formats. So that's everything from 8th edition onwards. So 8th edition Kamigawa, that period. Everything from then onwards to present day, where Legacy is everything.
And the reason I'm mentioning that is that those are almost like lanes or categories that people fall themselves into to play within, and they have certain expectations about those experiences when they are choosing to play it.
Yeah, absolutely. People like myself gravitate towards the Eternal formats because it allows you to play with stuff that you grew up with or old decks that you love. There'll be archetypes that will rotate out of standard. So there'll be a deck list that will rotate out of standard, but it'll have like a, once you adjust like 12 to 20 cards, there'll be a version of it in an older format, for example. And people, yeah, gravitate towards being able to play those things and become masters of their stuff. You know, we talk about Warhammer players who are like, you know, masters of playing Tau and can even play them when they're at their worst. You get that in Magic more so. People will be specialist deck pilots that won't change from an archetype, even when new stuff gets released. But that said, there is a thing now where the newer sets that go straight into the older formats, things that are called Modern Horizons, they print new cards that go straight into Modern. They avoid Standard because they're too powerful. These things are so power crept. It's like a set of Sacrosancts and Morven Vials, right? It's like, it's all the good stuff. And then Modern now, for example, looks nothing like it did 3 years ago, even though it's a non-rotating format, because there's an artificial rotation where if you're not playing with the new toys they've just printed, you're kind of playing at a disadvantage.
Really? And I believe even with the old format?
Yes, even the old format. So like Jace the Mind Sculptor is the most famous, powerful planeswalker of all time, right? Hardest is any play. There's like maybe one deck in Legacy that plays it as a one-off because it's just, it's power crept out. It's not good enough anymore. And you see that a lot. There's a card called Murktide Regent. It's this new creature that is just de facto the best creature in the game, basically. And it got printed last year in a Modern Horizons set. So it used to be that the Eternal formats, every set there'd be one or two cards that just about make it in because they're powerful enough to do something in a fringe deck. Now, with the power creep we had during the big periods of bans and then the Modern Horizons sets, like the old formats get rocked their core constantly with new additions. It's not the same problem with Warhammer where, you know, you don't have to paint up these cards and build them and stuff, right? But it is still frustrating to have a deck that you thought that would never rotate, like Delver and Legacy, and then suddenly you need 4 Ragavans, 4 Murktide Regents, 4 Unholy Heats, and 4 Dragonways Channels. That's like 16 cards immediately from a new set that transforms your deck overnight. And that's a common phenomenon at the moment. I believe that is a conscious decision from the company to monetize the older format, so people aren't just playing their old cards. But they have to buy the new stuff.
But these come out like once a year, once every 2 years or something like that. Is that?
Yeah, roughly speaking, yeah.
Okay. And then for the, I guess, popularity of the formats, where does the support come from? Like, are these formats, well, let me say, how does Wizards support them? Or is it more of a players holding all these things up?
So it used to be that Grand Prix, which are the Magic equivalent of GTs, would be where these formats get played. There'd be side events, but then the main events too. There'd be several Modern ones a year. There'd be one or two Legacy ones a year. Just before COVID, we had a controversy where Wizards moved away from supporting Legacy at that level. So they were like, we're not going to have any Legacy GPs anymore. And I thought that was a big mistake because Legacy GPs sell out. Legacy players who want to play with their old cards normally have quite a bit of disposable income because they're a bit older, the players. They will travel. And these things would always sell out. But Wizards were claiming it wasn't financially viable. I think that might have changed by now because of this new method of giving us new cards that break the older formats. Nowadays, though, you do get like larger Legacy tournaments in Europe and stuff, and being held by like local game stores and things. So it's, those things are being kept alive by the community. Modern and Pioneer, for example, are still pretty popular with Wizards. Pioneer, which is the last, I don't know, 8 years of cards, something like that, roughly speaking, maybe 10. No, about 8 years. That's going to be a Pro Tour format. So the Pro Tour is Wizards-endorsed big fancy esports showcase. And they're bringing that back to paper this year, the end of this year, beginning of next. Big announcements that they're bringing back to paper because it's all on Arena, our digital client, for a while. And they're going to be doing it with Pioneer. There's a theory they're doing that to push it so they can sell more Pioneer products down the line, like products that reprint Pioneer staples. Mm-hmm. Which is a different dynamic to Warhammer, right? Everything's always in print with Warhammer, where with Magic, we need reprints to make things accessible. But yeah, Pioneer is a hot thing for Wizards right now. They're super excited for it and supportive of it.
Nice. I don't know if we've really answered the question or whatever, but it sounds like they are active participants, like Wizards is active participants in at least trying to keep interest.
Yeah, so all the formats do have, none of them feel dead to like players. So like even the oldest format, the most ridiculous format, which is Vintage, where like Black Lotus is legal and the decks cost tens of thousands, they're still playable on MTGO, which is our like digital client, the old digital client. And so that still exists. And then Pauper, which is only like the most common of cards, is like the common rarity.
What is the rule of that? It's either is it common or is it like under a dollar value?
It's all commons. It's all commons. Okay. So Pauper is actually recently got a rules council created where they've got like 8 people from the community who are big Pauper players, put them on a council, and they get to like vote on whether things need to be banned or not. So that it's kind of like there is a group of people you can talk to who are sanctioned by Wizards to moderate the format, basically. And they might do that for Legacy eventually as well. Hopefully, maybe they'll reach out to me, who knows. But yeah, so Wizards are like, they're really active in promoting the vast majority of formats. It's only if something hasn't... You mentioned about like under a dollar. There's a thing called Penny Dreadful, which is like a grassroots thing where the legality of cards, they have to be worth less than a dollar. And that gets checked once a month and then resets. Yeah, super interesting format. It's a really cool format, but Wizards would never... First of all, Wizards can't acknowledge the secondary market. That's like
They don't. I think they make it kind of like a thing to completely ignore the secondary market. Yeah, they
cards are desirable, but they don't have a secondary market cost. I think that's to avoid gambling laws, basically. Right. If they start admitting that some of the cards are worth $50, it's like a lottery ticket, and they'll be in all sorts of world of hate and trouble, right? But yeah, Penny Dreadful will never be supported for that reason. And also, it's a fledgling thing that's fun, and like really entrenched players know about it, but it's not really a big thing. We've got off the rails a little bit here. There's a load of formats that all... supported to an extent, but there's like 3 or 4 that are the big ones that Wizards will hold events for and tournaments for. But even the bigger events that hold for those bigger formats will have side events that will fire. So I play a lot of Legacy at GPs before COVID. I'll just go along, I'll go to the side events, just play Legacy after the Legacy event and meet people from around the world who have come to play Legacy. Yeah, but that's not really comparable to Warhammer, because Warhammer doesn't even have side events at GTs. You can't just drop and play in a side event, right? It's
quite uncommon. That is changing. That's less of that is happening more often at some of the larger events, especially like the US Open Series, where they're Adepticon. Some of the more experience driven events are starting to have these types of things.
Yeah, because I've always found it weird, like when I was at London GT, that I couldn't, if I was doing bad, I couldn't drop and like join the pickup event sort of thing.
LVO, same thing.
So normal, you know.
If you draw I'm only highlighting very specific things because those are ones I know about. There may be others, but that is something that is at least on the mind of Warhammer players now, over the last few years or so.
Yeah, but I think, but that's also only for people who are really minded towards I want to win something. Like really, I'm going to stay in the main event, just play games of Warhammer because I want to play with my army against like-minded individuals. But if you are dead to top 8 or whatever, you might want to go and try and win the RT or whatever the pickup event.
That's it. I can't have you on without changing topics just a little bit about talking about the Magic Warhammer crossover.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we don't know anything about it. You know, at least we know very little about it, I guess I should say, from this side.
We got a load of information dumped about 2 weeks ago. We know the factions. We know the key art. We know, we even know price points, roughly speaking. So I can give you a lot of info.
This is the commanders. this is the format you were talking about before. I don't know if you want to like briefly describe what that is.
Yeah, so commander is basically 4 players sit at a table and you shuffle up. You've got a 100-card deck. It's singleton rules, so you can only have one of each card in your deck in terms of unique names, barring basic lands. You have a commander, which sits in your command zone, which is basically your warlord, if you imagine it that way. And then the last person alive wins. You start at 40 life, a lot more life than normal. So a lot more base build up, battle cruisery sort of magic. Although there is a thing called CDH, which is the high-powered version of this, which is where you want to kill everyone on turn 3 or 4. But
it's like comboing off things that affect the whole tables, go infinite, quote unquote.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's
not. There are tournaments for that. That's the interesting thing. There's a tournament called Marquesa recently, which is where CDH players go along and compete in this. So, you can get your competitive itch anywhere, I guess.
Nice. But
yeah, Commander is meant to be the casual, free for all, kitchen table, beer and pretzels magic.
And how do you feel about this kind of like crossing the streams here?
I am beyond excited. I was quite a critical person about the initial like crossovers to like Walking Dead and even Stranger Things that I'm quite a big fan of. It just felt very weird and not magic. But I've come round to that. I'm not excited for the Fortnite crossover. but Warhammer feels more adjacent. Warhammer's also in my interests. And all the cards in the command decks are also legal in Legacy. So there might be a situation where I get to play a tournament where I use my Stoneforge Mystic from Magic to collect like a melter gun and equip it to like a unicorn and shoot someone. That'd be pretty funny.
Oh, so there's no going to... or at least we don't know about now, restrictions about bringing it into the old, like, actual Eternal format where everything is legal kind of thing.
So basically in Legacy, everything is legal. So any Commander product is legal there. So these decks will be, just by virtue of how the system works, they're legal in Legacy. And we've also got, we've got Lord of the Rings coming early next year. So we might have a situation in Legacy where there might be, like, blue-red Gandalf might be a metagame deck. And then we might have, like, green-black Tzeentch or something. Like, oh, it would be great, but it'd be blue-black, wouldn't it, or something. But we might have situations where decks are named after things from other intellectual properties, which is kind of funny.
If you're basically, you get to name the deck if you win with it. And that's
there's deck names. It's similar to how we have city names in Warhammer. You have, like, Thick City and all this sort of stuff. It's just colloquial names for decks. Yeah. Colloquial names for understanding, like, lists and how they differ to other versions of that list.
But these Commander decks that are coming out are all Warhammer themed. So you could know nothing else about the rest of the Magic property and still just get your deck that's completely Warhammer themed in play.
So every single card is Warhammer themed in name and art, or the name will be, like, you know, would fit within Warhammer. So we got even the basic lands, we haven't seen them yet, but, like, plains, mountains, islands, forests, and swamps will be themed after places on planets within 40K or look like the situations in 40K. So we might have them where they're, like, in the background you can see a ship or a city or a titan. So, I mean, even the lands are going to be Warhammer themed. Oh, I'm beyond excited. I'm so hyped. Yeah.
So do you think any of your Magic buddies are going to want to take the jump into Warhammer?
Maybe. But to be fair, I've had more Warhammer creators approach me about playing the EDH decks, Commander decks with them, than I've had Magic players want to know about Warhammer. I guess because it's giving us a new... Because you can literally buy the four decks and sit down, and that is like a board game experience. Yeah. You can play right there and then. So it's more Warhammer players interested in the Magic rule set than the other way around.
For now. I've done that before, too.
What about you? Are you gonna buy them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But even in the past, I mean, I play Magic now, mostly online, though. But I've got my little collection of cards that, you know, whenever I retire one day, I know I can break them out and play Warhammer, play D&D, or play Magic to my heart's content. You know, hopefully it's a long time from now. You know, but
so are you, which deck are you most excited about? Is it the Imperium deck?
I want to see how it all comes together. I probably will play the Imperium, although it seems to be real slated towards Ultramarines. You know, so
yeah, we know we've got a Khalgar and the Suppressors of Blue as well. I'm really hoping there is at least one other flavor of Marine in there. It'd be a waste if there's not. But
so I'm gonna try. I'm probably gonna go with the Chaos first.
Yep.
But we'll see. But I am excited about doing it. But I've done that in the past too, where you mentioned it's a board game experience, where, you know, the pre-constructed decks have enough, like, interactive things and teeth in them to where you can have a cool experience with people from various skill levels, or maybe even zero skill level if they just understand the basic principles of the game, and at a kitchen table.
Yeah, and they should be balanced against one another as well. That's the idea. There's always normally one outlier, because that's just the nature of gaming, right? But yeah, the four should be balanced against one another to create like an even footing for you to play this, like, sort of board game like experience.
Nice. Well, I mean, again, we didn't solve the world's problems today, but I really wanted to bring you on and, you know, and just get some insight of how, you know, another game with a thriving competitive environment deals with, you know, having to make changes or adjustments or shifts in a living, breathing organism.
I would like to add that I think, just before we finish up, that I do think Games Workshop are on the right track. I actually think they're doing a really... And they might be a bit slow. No, that's not true. They are too slow to react. That's just a fact, right? We see it, like, week in, week out. People are like, well, are they going to fix this custodians problem? But when I got into the hobby all of about 2 years ago, when I started to veer towards wanting to go to tournaments and events to see stuff, there wasn't really data slates as such. There was balance changes in points and things, right? So for them to start doing regular data slate updates and bringing in, like, a seasonal thing, I think the Warzone books are a bit of a cash grab, right? Forcing you to buy a new book every couple of months. But that said, with all the tools we've got as a community, I do think it's cool to see the game have, like, a regular balance update. It makes it more akin to your League of Legends or your StarCraft or whatever in terms of patching. I think that's a good thing.
Nice, man. Well, thanks for coming on and spending the time. I'll put some links where people can find you, but where can people find you the most often?
youtube.com/PleasantKenobi. I make Magic the Gathering and Warhammer every Wednesday videos, and twitch.tv as well. I've been streaming a lot of Chaos Gate. I stream Magic, of course, as well. That are two main places where all the magic happens, if you will.
Sweet, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
No, thank you for having me on, friend.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I hope you enjoyed that segment with our special guest. Now it's me and Red Powell.
What up?
Red, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I know we've, you know, it's almost like a turnstile here for this episode, but hopefully people will be patient with us and enjoy the stuff.
I hope so. Yeah. I appreciate it.
So this episode has been largely around balance and a healthy competitive environment. You know, are the games specifically like Magic and Warhammer 40,000, are they comparable, and are they doing enough, and or are they doing too much? You know, is it happen too frequently?
I mean, I think that as a war game designer myself, I think that every game can always continue to improve. I think that that's in order to constantly remain relevant and engaging for its community, you have to do that. But at the same time, I mean, I think that the game is at a very interesting point. I think that it's almost what I would argue is too soon to tell in regards of how they're going about and trying to approach it now, because it's been we're only looking at two short seasons so far of how they've adjusted, right, between Octarius and Nachtmund, right? And so between those two, I mean, it's arguable that you could say we still need to see it play out. Like, data sets need more time to be able to develop if this is the correct approach or not. And so I love that they're trying it like this. I mean, we've seen, you know, and we, as in us, you and I, Paul, we've seen it over time, what it looks like when you wait years before edition adjustments or codex adjustments, up to now where we're seeing it in a matter of months. And so I think that the game designers and the rules team that's out there, that they're approaching it in an interesting way, to say the least. I'm not saying that it's not balanced. I think that, as we saw with the development of, and I'm sure Adam probably talked to this to a point, but the Armor of Contempt, and it wasn't just cutting back or nerfing, as you might call it, the newer codexes, but also giving bonuses to the other codexes. We've talked about that before, and the balances that they've done. I think that it has some fair implications, because as we've seen, even with Sisters doing as well as they have in certain events recently, giving benefits to teams that may not have received newer codexes has done pretty well in certain regards, from my position.
Yeah. So you're supportive of this?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so far I'm supportive of always of innovation space. And I think that even from previous, where we saw it with the adjustments from White Dwarfs and what they brought in and they've adjusted, I think it's great. I think that it's awesome. I think it keeps people engaged in different ways. You know, they're dropping new codexes for different Xenos factions at the same times that they're dropping the Mortifactors, for example, in a White Dwarf and different aspects like that. And I think it's fun that we get to play around with that. I know that there's certain aspects to, you know, do you have the White Dwarf, or are you using, I wish Adam was here right now for me to throw the app out there again, as far as the you know, updated faction rules and things like that for what comes out in White Dwarf. I mean, I think the pace at which they're dropping things and the seasonal aspect is pretty interesting. I think that the jury is still out in regards of if it's good or not, but that's why we do these things. That's why you execute and experiment with innovative space, because if it doesn't work, then slow it down. That's fine. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to just trash I'm not going to trash several armies just because they experimented with a rollout scenario of, okay, seasonal rules over quarters or something like that, right? So I think it's worth experimenting with, by all means.
Nice. No, I think that's right. I think that's some great perspective. And it's one of those topics where I think some people are always going to feel like it is too much, and some people are always going to feel like it's not enough. And, you know, one of the points that we made earlier in the show is that, you know, we're talking about a very specific set of constraints of competitive play, to where we could walk into any game store or any table anywhere in the world, and everyone knows just what the expectations of the play experience is going to be. And if you're playing not in that environment, you can more easily have time to craft whatever you want that play experience to be. And so we're talking about a very specific set of play experiences.
Absolutely. And I think that you're right. I mean, it is very specific. And I think that for a lot of folks, I'm not going to say the majority, I'm not going to say the general or whatever, I think it is a very specific group in this competitive aspect, going to these larger events on a on a consistent and expansive basis, really. I mean, we're talking all the way from the UK to Spain to all sorts of environments, not just in the US, and where this competitive environment is playing itself out for a lot of other folks that maybe aren't traveling to these broader events consistently, you know, for your own community. I don't think that it has to be as dynamic as maybe some of the competitive environment plays it out to be. I do think that there is a little bit of maybe availability bias in regards to the competitive environment and the meta watch aspect and things like that. Whereas your own meta and your own community plays itself out in a different way that doesn't necessarily have to be, as some people maybe are concerned about, jerked around by the development in the competitive environment. I just don't think that it doesn't have to be the case, right? I can understand where some people might feel that is the pressure of it, but I don't think it's necessary by any means.
Yeah, well, we'll see how this all plays out over the course of these seasons in this development and this edition. I'm enjoying it so far.
I have too. I mean, and I've gotten to play sporadically in some of the larger events, but even in the more local community, I mean, just being able to try things out and see how people are approaching the different codexes and the metas and trying to prepare for some of the metas. I think it's been pretty exciting. I think that there's been a lot of development and a lot of opportunity for people with different armies, that's for sure.
So this weekend, by the time people are hearing this, the Age of Darkness set will be up for pre-order. I'm changing gears just a little bit.
No, so, please.
Heresy stuff will be very much on people's minds. And I think I'm going to use this as an excuse to kind of revamp my Blood Angels for Heresy specifically. But I've seen people, you know, I'm definitely co-oping this idea, but doing a very second edition paint scheme on the Blood Angels.
Mm.
Now,
and can you describe, exactly what that, I mean, we're not talking just a bunch of red armor with yellow helmets. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you nailed it. I'm done. No. Okay. So I want to use the modern red. So the Blood Angels used to have kind of like an orangish tint to the red. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to lean back into that. But what you would see was a lot of the weapon casings or like the casing around the very tips of like las cannons or the Melta barrels or whatever were yellow, like the bright yellow. And so I've got a pretty good yellow recipe for how I do the helmets now, but I was thinking, you know, there's gotta be some, it's easier now to paint yellow than it ever has been. And so I got fishing around for some tutorials, and that landed me on an Imperial Fist tutorial, by I think the guy on YouTube, I think Richard Gray, if you want to go check out this tutorial, but basically how to do a yellow, but he also does some weathering in this video. And for years and years and years, I've been of the mind that Blood Angels they're always going to try to make their armor look as good as possible before they go into, you know, while they're on the battle barges, you know, it's going to look as pristine as possible when they go land on the planet, wherever the engagement. But in the Heresy, the whole idea is that they're basically fighting for their lives across the galaxy, you know, for what they think is the fate of humanity. And so maybe they don't. So anyway, this tutorial, painting yellow, I will say I do think it is, my tutorial for yellow is nothing fancy. It is Averlyn Sunset. You basically get a lot of work done with Averlyn Sunset. Mm. It is.
I mean, you know, to be fair, sometimes you got to get dirty. I get it. You know?
Yeah, but so like, how do I make it a little bit more special? I'm like, well, maybe put some weathering on this. So we kind of have a blend of, and I don't mean like probably not crazy weathering, but this tutorial uses a lot of oil washes, which is something if you're looking to like branch out into a new painting technique. Oil washes, I think the most expensive thing in the oil wash is actually getting the odorless mineral spirits. Mm. And you could probably even get that less expensive from a hardware store. Mm. Do not quote me on that though, because I don't know if the mineral spirits from the hardware store containers are the same as you get in the bottles from like the specialty painting shops.
Yeah, I'm as someone who worked in a paint store, I guess my initial recommendation would be to not follow that, just because I think that there may be some risk associated with the mineral spirits from a more industrial aspect compared to the hobby aspect. So I'd just be very, 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 very careful with that. But I think that that's a really great point as far as how you can approach some ways to weather down or bring out different aspects of colors.
Well, the wash is to get contrast on the models. That's kind of what it was. With the way the enamels stuff and the oils work, right, is that you can put them on the model, and then since they have a long drying time, you can spend a lot of time manipulating them to get them exactly where you want. And then you can get, you know, there's a lot of hobby grade. Let's just say, don't go get it from a hardware store. Get hobby grade stuff.
I mean, you know, to your point though, I mean, everybody's got at least a handful of Firstborn Marines out there. Why not? You got space and. You've likely got the inventory to experiment. So, I mean, there's nothing saying you can't, but I would just say definitely experiment before you fully commit between hobby version versus, you know, hardware.
So with this stuff, with the long drying time, you get to kind of move the product around. And then even after it spends a little bit of time curing, you can go back with like a cotton bud and clean up places that you want to have a brighter highlight. Again, looking for ways people to get stuff on the table. I think experimenting with the oils and the enamel type stuff might be an interesting way of getting some things done, including some of this like real gritty kind of industrial weathering. And he also uses weathering powder, and that's great for creating like real texture and dust. It also leads into, like, I'm actually going to have one of the, like, a friend of the show, Shadows Edge Miniatures, has a new weathering powder product line launching soon on Kickstarter. Talk about that next week, I think. So if you're looking to get into this, there might be some deals on that you could check out. If you haven't experimented with these things before, I'm going to give it a shot on my Heresy Blood Angels. The new Heresy Blood Angels. And so I'm going to try to do this kind of like retro scheme with my modern red, but using the yellow as the weapon tips and that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah.
And see if I can pull this off, and then maybe go a little bit more dimension, a little bit of weathering, because they're fighting that, you know, the battle for their lives.
This is a rough time. It's a hard time, man.
That's what I thought.
Can't all be pretty. Sorry.
Yeah, you never get a moment to rest. That's the whole like pace and stuff of the Heresy that I think that they're going with.
That's cool.
So we'll see. But that's our show this week. Got a quick hobby segment, more of a tutorial, what I liked about this tutorial is that it doesn't seem to skip any steps and shows you the whole way, and also shows some products that you might be curious about and how to easily get into that. And then also the practical application of being descriptive in that narrative about the ongoing war, which I think is kind of cool, because when you're playing with these things, it's kind of what we're trying to do, especially in the Heresy. Well, dude, that's our show this week. Rand, I'm glad you could make it.
Me too, man.
We'll try to be back with the whole cast next week. And until then, leave us some 5-star reviews. Please like, share, subscribe, leave a comment or something like that. We really appreciate it. And we'll see y'all then.
See ya.
They said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.